Today, are we there yet? The market update for the 14th of August 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we look at the performance of the markets from the US, Europe and Asia and consider the underlying drivers as, in Australia, companies are handing back loads of cash to shareholders via buybacks, even as Delta continues to rage and iron ore prices drop firmly. First, in the US, the Dow Jones Industrial and S&P 500 edged up to closing records on Friday, notched a second straight week of gains, buoyed by a climb in Walt Disney shares, but a sharp drop in consumer sentiment did keep gains in check. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.04% to 35,515. The S&P 500 gained 0.16% to 4,468. And the Nasdaq Composite added just 0.04% to 14,822. For the week, the Dow gained 0.87%. The S&P 500 advanced 0.71%, but the Nasdaq slipped 0.09%. The University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index slumped to a reading of 70.2 in the preliminary August survey, and that's down from 81.2 in July, and the weakest reading since December 2011. The fall in consumer optimism over the economy comes as the Delta variant has scaled back expectations about a return to normal. There is little doubt that the pandemic's resurgence due to the Delta variant has been met with a mixture of reason and emotion, according to the University of Michigan. The surge in negative economic assessments reflects an emotional response, mainly from dashed hopes that the pandemic would end soon. Economists agree and believe that consumers are weighing up the realization that the end of the pandemic has still a way to go. The promise of vaccines and a return to something at least resembling pre-COVID normal has shifted towards concerns that fears of being sick, masks, social distancing, virtual distance learning, working from home, an endless stream of booster shots and seeing relatives through glass will instead be the norm going forward, Jeffries said. That is concerning because the consumer is by all accounts in an extremely strong position, but there is this kind of COVID fatigue that is really starting to wear on people's sentiment, said Ross Mayfield, investment strategist at Baird in Louisville, Kentucky. Regardless of lockdown or full reopen, the consumer is healthy enough to spend and kind of keep the economy afloat, but it will be different names and different sectors that become the beneficiaries of it. And signs the consumer, which makes up two-thirds of the economy in the US, is growing aware of the economy, sent US Treasury yields sharply lower and weighed on financial and banking stocks. JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs and Bank of America were all down more than 1% on Friday. And the report sent the yield on the 10-year US Treasury note lower and in turn helped lift mega cap growth names such as Microsoft up 1.05%, while online retail giant Amazon slipped 0.29%. Still, the broader market was supported by rising tech stocks and better-than-expected quarterly results from corporates, including Disney, which rose 1% as one of the biggest boosts to both the Dow and the benchmark S&P index after its profit topped market expectations as its streaming services added more customers than expected and its pandemic-hit US theme parks returned to profitability. It was led by better-than-expected Disney Plus streaming performance and a return to profit on its theme parks and its resorts business. Some on Wall Street see challenges for Disney in its fiscal fourth quarter amid a lack of new content to meaningfully grow subscribers, but they're bullish over the longer term as its parks business continues to recover. We remain bullish that core Disney Plus growth will accelerate in financial year 22 with rest of the world launches and ramping original content releases, while a continued parks recovery should increase anticipation of its long-term profit potential, said Credit Suisse. Investors also digested the latest US economic data released on Thursday. The producer price index grew 1% month over month in July, indicating that higher commodity costs and supply bottlenecks are still adding to inflationary pressures for companies. And a total of 375,000 initial jobless claims were also filed throughout the week. That's lower than 387,000 claims filed during the previous week. So far, stocks have managed to grind slowly to new highs over the past few sessions as investor confidence in the economic recovery was bolstered by the strong earnings season, the passage of the large infrastructure bill, and data showing inflation may be increasing at a slower pace than feared. But the COVID situation is definitely now there, haunting potential fears. In the wake of new data from earlier this week that showed consumer price increases slowed in July, while producer prices posted their biggest annual rise in more than a decade, investors are now looking ahead to the meeting of central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, later this month for signals about policy down the road. In recent days, several Fed officials have said it's nearly time for the central bank to begin pulling back on its monetary support, including the tapering of its asset purchases. The record-setting week for the broader market comes amid lower trading volumes, but key events next week include remarks from Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Tuesday and the release of the Fed's June meeting minutes on Wednesday, and those could provide fresh direction. Looking ahead, though, investors continue to believe the broader market will continue to grind higher, led by cyclical sectors of the market as the economy continues its transition from a pandemic-induced recession. We'll trend higher into the end of the year and most likely led by cyclicals, said Michael Skillman, the chief executive officer at Faith Investor Services. The S&P 500 had a very strong earnings season in the second quarter. Retailer sentiment is strong, and some of the more cyclical areas of the economy have really picked up, albeit from a very depressed level last year. That's why I'm generally constructive on cyclicals, he added. The US volatility index was down 1.03% to 15.43, a new one-month low. But gold futures for December delivery was up 1.6% to 1,779, and crude oil for delivery in September fell 1.74% on Tuesday. The energy sector capped a 19-day streak in which no member of the index traded above the 50-day moving average. That's the second longest span since the late 1950s. That's something that hasn't happened since the summer of 2001 when Enron and its ensuing bankruptcy was pressurising the energy complex. The latest COVID-19 wave is leading to tighter curbs on movements across the globe, though there are mixed assessments of its impact. The International Energy Agency reduced its demand forecast for the rest of the year, while Goldman Sachs predicted only a transient hit to consumption. The euro-US dollar was up 0.58% to 1.1796, while the US dollar index was down 0.56% to 92.51. European stocks scaled new heights on Friday and clocked their fourth consecutive week of gains on optimism over a strong earnings season and steady recovery from the pandemic-led economic downturn. Just don't mention the Delta virus. The Pan-European Stoxx 600 index inched up 0.2% to a record high of 476.16. That's for the 10th straight session. The index has now matched its best winning streak since December 2006. While the pace of gains has slowed due to thin summer trading, the index has logged 9-day gains several times in the past 15 years. Germany's DAX ticked above 16,000 points for the first time ever, while France's CAC 40 index touched its highest level in nearly 21 years. Both European and US stocks hit record levels this week, supported by rising earning expectations and improving economic data, even as Asian equities were held back by worries about Chinese regulation and the fast-spreading Delta variant of the coronavirus. If investors are concerned about rising Delta variant cases globally, there's little evidence that it's prompting any undue worry, although markets in Asia have been a little more cautious, said Michael Howson, chief market analyst at CMC Markets in the UK. And UBS says iron ore prices are falling as China appears to be enforcing its target of steel production being flat year on year in 2021, which implies June to December crude steel production is to decline by around 50 million tonnes, half over half, to 502 million tonnes based on the recent data. The 10-day data shows daily pig iron production is down around 6% in July versus June, and key steel producers have also announced plans to cut production in the second half. This has resulted in mills destocking and iron ore prices falling sharply in a thin spot market. Other policy developments were mixed. The government remains focused on controlling the leverage of developers and property prices, but is also taking measures to accelerate infrastructure construction. This has resulted in steel prices lifting while iron ore prices fall. At the end of July, the Politburo also called for a correction in campaign-style carbon reductions. However, this is expected to mainly target China's thermal coal, not steel industry. And they noted that iron ore exports have not yet lifted materially from either Australia or Brazil, although producers' guidance, mainly from Rio and Vale, implies that supply will lift around 60 million tonnes half over half in the second half of 21, and they expect China's steel curtailments to be targeted in the fourth quarter when demand slows seasonally and air pollution is in focus, especially ahead of the Winter Olympics in February 22. As a result, they expect prices to stabilise in September and October before continuing to fall back to even below $100 a ton in 2022. That would have a very significant impact on the Australian economy. Drewry's Composite World Container Index increased marginally this week, up 0.5% or $50 to $9,421 US per 40-foot container. That's the 17th consecutive week of increases. Freight rates from Shanghai to Genoa soared 2% or $201 to reach $12,993 per 40-foot container. That's a change of 556% year over year. And spot rates on Shanghai to Los Angeles gained $93 to reach $10,322 for a 40-foot box. But rates on Rotterdam to New York plunged 7%, a decrease of $86 to $1,171. Asia-Pacific stocks were mostly down on Friday, as the latest regulatory tightening in China and the spread of COVID-19's Delta variant globally soured investor sentiment. China's Shanghai Composite was down 0.24% to 3,516 as China expanded its regulation tightening exercise to the real estate sectors, with private equity funds suspended from raising money to invest in residential property development. The latest COVID-19 outbreak in the country has also forced the partial shutdown of Ningbo Zhuzhan port, with concerns growing about a repeat of 2020's shipping challenges. Japan's Nikkei 225 inched down 0.14% to 27,977. As COVID-19 continues to spread globally, Asia-Pacific is struggling to curb its latest outbreaks, while Europe and the US have pulled ahead in vaccination rates, pushing stocks to record levels there. It's really hard to keep people back or put people back in lockdown. There's this pent-up demand, and I think we're going to start to see that surge happen again, Wells Fargo Asset Management Head of Active Equity, Ann Miletti, told Bloomberg. But remember those consumer figures from the US. Confidence is definitely rolling back. However, the risk of a contagion in equities after a prolonged period of calm remains, she added. The Australian share market hit a record high on Friday amid a run of strong results from local companies. The S&P ASX 200 advanced 0.5% to 7,628 on Friday, rising 1.2% over the week. Commonwealth Bank closed the week slightly higher, rising 0.3% to 104.30. They hit a record high earlier in the week after the bank announced it would return almost $10 billion to shareholders through buybacks and dividends after reporting a 19.8% increase in cash profits. A profit, by the way, bolstered by access to the $51 billion of cheap money from the RBA's term funding facility. So in other words, we are supporting the bank's profits and the bank's shareholders. NAB advanced 3.8% to 27.70 after its 10.3% increase in quarterly cash earnings was well received by the market, and other major banks also closed the week higher, with Westpac up 4.1% to 26.16 and ANZ 3.6% higher to 29.53. But Rio Tinto tumbled 9.2% to 120.36 after it traded ex-dividend for its record $9.1 billion distribution. It led a broadly weaker iron ore sector as the price of the bulk commodity fell. Champion Iron closed the week 8.1% lower at 6.13, while Fortescue Metal Group declined 3.3% to 22.30. GrainCorp soared 14% to 6.09 after upgrading its earnings and profit guidance based on export market clamouring for supply to meet their food needs and another bumper crop in the ground in Australia. QB Insurance climbed 12.1% to 12.58 after reporting a 14.3% increase in revenue, while profit rebounded from a loss in the previous period. IAG shares also rose, climbing 8.8% to 5.43, despite reporting a $427 million loss, with the outgoing chairwoman lashing the company's organisational and risk management failures. AMP firmed 8.4% to $1.16, despite not declaring an interim dividend after a jump in underlying profit for the 6 months ending June the 30th. Iress rose 6.4% to $15.12, and the ASX-listed financial services software group opened its book to EQT following an improved takeover offer from the Sweden-based private equity firm. The gold miners were among the market's worst performers during the week, following a heavy sell-off on Monday linked to an upbeat US jobs report that fueled speculation that a pullback of stimulus by the Federal Reserve could arrive sooner than expected. Silver Lake Resources fell 10.7% to $1.33. Resolute Mining dipped 10.7% to 50 cents. Regis Resources declined 5.5% to $2.41. Gold Road Resources lost 6.8% to $1.24. Northern Star Resources slid 6.5% to $9.29. And Newcrest Mining closed 3.5% lower to $25.19. Tech stocks were also among the week's worst performers. Appen dipped 6.8% to $11.70. Nuex fell 3.7% to $2.63. Zero slid 3.9% to $142.95. And Megaport declined 2.7%. to 1690. Turning to those billions of dollars in share buybacks pledged by Australia's biggest businesses through the latest round of corporate earnings, they have powered share prices to fresh records as companies turned pandemic savings back to their investors. The 10 biggest share repurchase plans this year injected $13.3 billion of capital into their respective stocks, according to recent data, with the largest unveiled over the past few weeks as the 2021 reporting season heats up. The flow of money into listed corporations' own equity comes as companies also deliver a powerful wave of dividends, reflecting the rapid pivot from the cost-cutting measures imposed when the pandemic began to bumper profits within a year. This is returning emergency equity that wasn't needed, said John Lockton, head of Australian equities for Wilsons. You had lots of companies raise emergency equity 12 months ago. They raised it over a quarter and they will release it back to shareholders over the next 2 years. Commonwealth Bank, the largest company on the ASX by locally listed market value, said on Wednesday that it would distribute $10 billion to shareholders, a sum exceeding the market capitalization of most companies in the ASX 200. the lender will offload $6 billion in a share buyback, making it among the biggest on record after BHP's $7.3 billion repurchase in 2018 and Telstra's $6.6 billion buyback in 2011. CBA could well deliver a further $6 billion in a share buyback in its next full-year result and still meet Common Equity Tier 1 requirements, said Lockton. Other chunky buybacks announced in the past few weeks include a $2.5 billion repurchase for NAB and a $1.5 billion buyback for ANZ, both announced last month. On Tuesday, Suncorp declared a $250 million per repurchase plan, following 2 days later by Telstra, which unveiled its $1.35 billion buyback after selling a stake in its mobile towers business last month. Those will be followed by others in the coming weeks as earnings season reaches its busy stretch. Blue chips that are anticipated to deliver further eye-watering buybacks include Miners BHP, Fortescue Metals and South 32, and supermarket chain Woolworths. At the high end of estimates, share repurchase plans from these companies could in total provide $6 billion more, giving the surplus capital on hand and recent asset sales for Woolworths, Lockton said. There is a capital management journey here that boards are going on. You don't just give out all the capital in one hit. You reserve some because tomorrow could bring a great new investment idea that boards need to have money for, he said. The ongoing threat of the pandemic, underscored by the Delta variant sweeping through the country and forcing Sydney into a lockdown, is another pressing concern facing boards and executives when deciding to keep excess capital in hand, he added. Robust profits and the prospect of a swift rebound in activity after the current lockdowns has soothed investor worries, sending share prices for some of the biggest names on the ASX 200 to new peaks this month. James Hardy, Macquarie Group, Rio Tinto and Commonwealth Bank are among the largest companies in the blue chip benchmark to have touched record highs in August after strong earnings. James Hardy shares hit a fresh peak after reporting record sales and profits in the June quarter in a set of results driven by US demand for its fibre cement. Rio Tinto's $12 billion dividend announced late last month has helped to power its share price to another record, heightening expectations for its global iron ore rivals BHP, which reports next Tuesday, and Fortescue Metal Group's, which reports on August 30. Within the good cheer, there's been several disappointments, though. Transurban's shares fell sharply after it revealed a $3.3 billion cost overrun for its Westgate Tunnel project in Melbourne, while AGL stock fell to its lowest in more than 15 years after cautioning investors that its profits would fall. Overall, dividends and buybacks have exceeded estimates, helping to power the share market higher, despite concerns on the edges about the pandemic. Dividends have been, if not in line, then better than expected this week, said Matt Williams, a portfolio manager at Arley Funds Management. There is a wall of cash that is coming back to investors. The S&P ASX 200 ended the week 1.2% higher. To close the new peak on Friday, the benchmark is up more than two-thirds from its pandemic lows of March last year. Westpac, run by Peter King, will hand down its Pillar 3 report next week, but it's expected to stop short of a full earnings update. The timing of Sydney's COVID-19 outbreak, which marked its worst day of newly reported infections on Friday with 390 cases, arrived at the tail end of the financial year, creating an awkward setting as companies deliver strong profits into a period of uncertainty. Ramping up vaccinations will allow Australia to relax restrictions within months, potentially, limiting the long-term drag of lockdowns on listed companies, said Mr. Williams. That is how we think it will trend. For us, the line in the sand is Melbourne Cup Day, he said, referring to the race on November the 2nd, the first Tuesday of the month. There is no other choice but to forget about the case numbers and focus only on hospitalizations and deaths. And open up, he said. And more broadly, inflation and spending numbers are due to be released from the UK and Canada next week. Prices are up across the globe and the CPI reports should reflect that. The lockdown in Australia should weaken demand, while the opposite is true for Canada. Next week, we'll get a good look at how bad the lockdowns have hit the Australian economy, With jobs growth and spending likely to fall sharply, the Aussie-US dollar is trading near a nine-month low, but it could easily slip to 70 cents if the rest of the world considers fresh lockdowns like Australia. And over in New Zealand, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's monetary policy announcement is the most interesting event next week. Investors are pricing in a 90% chance of a rate hike, but with Australia in lockdown and the world contending with a rapidly spreading Delta variant, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand may be worried about the future outlook. With that said, domestically, New Zealand's economy is on a solid recovery path. The labour market is back to pre-pandemic levels, house prices are soaring and inflation is up across the globe. If they hike with the intentions to do more, the New Zealand dollar will soar. If they raise rates but express caution, the New Zealand dollar could sell off despite tightening. And finally, Bitcoin prices have rallied by more than 60% since July the 20th, and this upward activity has led to another round of speculation suggesting that market prices could well reach $100,000 by the end of the year. But this bullish activity on the Bitcoin US dollar is much more likely to be the result of stop-loss hunting following one of the largest short squeezes in the history of the financial markets. Near the end of July, roughly $883 million in crypto short positions were liquidated during a single 24-hour trading period, and 81% of that activity, or $720 million, was based on crypto pairings denominated in Bitcoin. Now that we are quickly approaching the important psychological marker of 50,000 US, it's likely that large orders are being placed on both sides of the market. And this means that there is a large amount of, quote, blood in the water, as each side targets gains fueled by stop losses tripped on the other side of the trade. Ultimately, this means that significant uncertainties remain in cryptocurrency markets and that we could see a tremendous amount of volatility once Bitcoin edges towards that critical 50,000 level. And to underscore once again, it is the derivative trades against the underlying, which is the big unknown here, just as is with gold and many other market assets too. And more broadly, a stock market correction is becoming, I think, more likely as we ascend the current dizzy heights, even as the Delta variant wreaks more havoc. And if the market gets twitchy on this, expect to see some big falls. I still think late September and early October is the highest risk window, but we will see. I still don't get the sense that many in the market have truly factored in the long, slow grind that Delta represents. And of course, there could well be more and virulent variations coming down the track later. That is the unknown unknown. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.